Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's a fighter, not a quitter. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey, Corey.
Well, Steve, what a week. A political earthquake. Seismic ruptures in British politics. Things will never be the same again. I made a correct prediction.
Savour this moment, dear listeners, because it won't happen again.
Now that prediction, Steve, was that at some point this year there would be a split in one of Britain's political parties. And this week it happened.
In both political parties?
In both, yeah.
And so technically you might be, you could say your prediction was actually wrong because you said one of them and it's happened in both.
No, I think I get two correct predictions for the price of one. Then when the ERG split off, I get another one. If you haven't kept up, and bear in mind we are recording on Friday, so there could well be no Labour MPs left by Sunday when this episode comes out. But let's just kind of try and run through what's happened. So on Monday, 7 Labour MPs left to join the independent group, Plain Tig. And the launch was inauspicious. There was a journalist was heard off mic saying that between this and Brexit, rule Woolest. People wondering what colour the logo would be of the new group. And then Angela Smith, who's one of those magnificent seven, she came up with a colour of a funny tinge because she, within about 4 or 5 hours of the group launching, managed to plunge it into a racism row.
Which is pretty impressive given that really one of the only things that this group is supposed to stand for at this point in time is being against anti-Semitism and against racism. It's just an absolute muck up on their part. Fair.
So I think she was talking about Ash Sarkar, wasn't she? One of the people from Navarro Media who was on Politics Live and talked about people who were, I think, from BAME backgrounds or having a funny tin and then corrected herself. And then was on Kay Burley and she started talking about having a bottoms-up politics. Which, if any of you listen to the first iteration of this podcast, Democracy at some point, will know how that ends, and it does not end well. Then an eighth joined, Joan Ryan joined, on the Tuesday, I think it was. 3 Tories joined, so Anna Sowerbury, Sarah Wollaston, Heidi Allen, and today we have a 12th MP who's joined, who's Ian Austin. Sadly, I was saddened to discover it's not the former Lancashire and England all-rounder Ian Austin. It is, in fact, the MP for Dudley North.
The thing I'm finding about all of the people who have so far defected is that out of all of them, there's only 2, I'd say, that are actually impressive in any real form. Luciana Berger has been a very good frontbench MP when she's had the opportunity to do so. Chukka's all right at it. Sowerbury's all right. Heidi Allen's not really done anything. And Wollaston's very effective on the areas she's good at. But the rest of them are just...
I think I'm right in saying that Sowerbury's the only former cabinet minister. I don't think Chukka Malam was in the cabinet.
No, he was shadow cabinet.
He was shadow, wasn't he, I think. Yeah. In terms of the Labour side anyway, it feels to me like the common denominator between all of them is that they were probably all at risk of deselection. Yeah. They've either had no confidence passed in them. I think Chris Leslie has. In Streatham, Chukka Malam's seat, rules were changed there recently to allow essentially an all-member ballot, I think so. Essentially, it's a straight ballot, which I thought between members rather than it being about spread between different branches, which I think it was thought would make it easier for his deselection. It's been a very high publicised ousting by various dodgy, anti Semitic looking people in Liverpool Wavertree CLP against Luciana Berger. So, in a few instances, it feels on the Labour side anyway like people have kind of jumped before they were pushed.
Yeah, which does kind of make sense for a number of them. The biggest question surrounding pretty much this new independent group is what are you trying to do here? What is the plan? Are you trying to destroy Labour? Are you just trying to destroy the Tories? Are you trying to be left? Are you trying to be right? What are you trying to actually achieve here? Because at the moment, you're not doing anything other than just removing the government's majority and members of the opposition. And, you know, that's fine, but to what end?
And actually, it's interesting that Ian Austin, is not playing Tig with the others. Ian Austin is an independent MP on his own, as opposed to an independent MP
in the
with
independent
other...
group.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, what you'll see is there are former kind of like Labour MPs like John Woodcock, who was suspended under Labour Party rules whilst under investigation for basically sexual harassment of a staffer or something like this. I'm not exactly au fait on the details, but again, he walked before he was pushed. Is the general feeling in a lot of circles. He also claimed that he didn't feel he was going to get a fair trial, basically, or a fair hearing from the Labour leadership, which is also probably true, given how outspoken he has been. So, really complicated situation there. But none of those are moving towards this either. And no. Apparently there's discussions about whether or not they even want them involved in this kind of group because of the mess that it comes with them.
Well, indeed, I mean, there are quite a few other independent MPs, aren't there? I think Ivan Lewis, but again, there's sexual harassment claims hanging over him.
Frank Field,
who's a bit Brexity.
Jared O'Mara, who just seems to have vanished.
Yeah, and Fiona Arsania, who's in prison.
Yeah.
Which would not be a good look. You can see why it's happened, I suppose, just in general, because Labour under Corbyn has moved decidedly to the left, the Tories have moved decidedly to the right. That leaves a big space in the middle of British politics.
Yeah,
and it is that kind of Cameroonian Blairite bit that these MPs are filling, I suppose.
In both cases, for the Tories and the Labourites, or the former Labourites in this group, you know, they can all point to major either policy failings that they seriously disagree with from their leadership, or other failings of their leaderships as well. So, for instance, Brexit looms large in both for the Tory and Labour defectors to the independent group. For Labour, the anti-Semitism issue is a major factor as well, especially obviously for Luciana Berger, a lady of Jewish heritage.
And I think it's definitely been exacerbated by Brexit. I think the other thing is that essentially this is all part of the fact that British politics is kind of broken, and that Brexit has essentially broken the British constitution. So you've had the tension between the fact that we have essentially a parliamentary democracy where we elect MPs to do a job and to represent us. However, the Brexit, we also then introduced a referendum system, and so MPs are in the position of trying to implement a referendum result they don't really agree with. So there's kind of that. You've got the tension we've talked about before already on the podcast about are MPs delegates of their constituents, or do they show independent judgment? And then you've also got a bit of a tension between the viewpoint of party members doesn't necessarily then reflect the view of party MPs, in that it's not necessarily Jeremy Corbyn's parliamentary party yet, and the tension you have there. And then also then the tension of,
are MPs meant to represent their party, or are they meant to represent their constituents as a whole?
Indeed. And as an MP, are you elected because it's your name on the ballot paper? Are you elected because you are the member of the party there? And all of that is kind of a bit in flux at the moment, which is why I think it's odd in terms of, you mentioned they need policies. It's really odd that PR isn't one of those things that's mentioned. We should probably...
Our priors on this, just so you're aware.
Trying to think about where they sit in terms of the party spectrum, and thinking about the Lib Dems. Hello, Mark, by the way. Obviously, we talked about the Tories moved to the right, Labour's moved to the left. The Lib Dems haven't been able to pick up that kind of centre vote because essentially their brand is a little bit tarnished. Yeah. Sorry, Mark. And the thing is, though, although Vince Cable has extended the hand of friendship, I can't really see this group working with him particularly, because one thing is, I don't think the group's particularly hot on civil liberties. When Chris Leslie wrote a pamphlet for the Socialshore Market Foundation, which we covered on the podcast last year.
Oh God, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, I see. ID cards is one of the few policies that was in there. So I can't really see them being particularly hot there. And I think also the fact they haven't, they want to change politics, but they haven't mentioned proportional representation. one of the ways you could actually change politics in a positive way to get parties working together.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just mystifying to me.
I mean, I think at the moment the notion of, oh, we're going to change politics is just a generic statement. I don't think there is anything more behind that at this stage, because when you say, oh, we want to change something, the first question is how? Like, what are you going to change and how are you going to do it? And they can't answer that at the moment because they don't have any policies. They don't even seem to have any kind of main talking points of areas they want to talk about other than Brexit. Now, to a degree, that's fair enough. This isn't a political party yet. This is just a group of people.
Playing TIG.
Yeah, playing TIG. But there's supposed to be something more than just a group of independent MPs. And they're clearly moving towards something to do with a kind of forming a political party. So the question then becomes, if you're doing that, what are you trying to do with it? And so far, we don't have any answers on that.
And this is why, for me, this isn't the SDP. This isn't big frontline politicians. So the Gang of Four, they were cabinet ministers or had been cabinet ministers and high-profile cabinet ministers mm-hmm. at that, in a way that these group of MPs weren't. And it was in response to Labour's shifting to inelectability in the early 80s with policies like leaving the EEC, unilateral disarmament, all that kind of stuff. What it feels to me more like is a group of new parties that people tried to form in the 1930s in a response to the problems of the Great Depression and the inability of the national government mm-hmm. to deal with that. So, for instance, in the early 1930s, before he went full-on insane fascist, Oswald Mosley had a bit of a reputation as a bit of a radical Keynesian at that point, approached Harold Macmillan and Nye Bevin to see if they wanted to set up a new party.
He also got in touch with Sir Robert Cecil, the founder of the League of Nations Union as well, to try and get in touch. These are not fascists. These are not the sorts of people you would ever associate Mosley ever wanting to be in a party with, and yet
Macmillan had a reputation at the time of being quite a socialist Tory MP. There were people who thought he should be kicked out of the Tories for being too left-wing, which is
hilarious.
Yes. And there was also the United Empire Party, which I think was set up, one of the newspaper lords, I can't remember if it's Lord
Beaverbrook.
I think it was Beaverbrook. So it feels like that. And those parties didn't really work and didn't get off the ground. But it feels like, to me, it's a party that's being, or a movement anyway, or a grouping, launched that in kind of a reaction to a national crisis as well. So I think there's a few different elements here. It doesn't feel like splits in the past, and even splits from the 1980s, I think. It feels very different. And I think that's why it's really hard to know how it goes, because it could potentially, if it can get some policies, come up with a fairly sizable chunk of the vote. So in December, we recorded a podcast on BMG and their research into the 10 political clans in Britain now, or 12 political clans. And we had a look at that report again to try and work out who we thought these people could try and, this group could try and appeal to. And we narrowed it down to three. So the Orange Bookers, who, I don't know if you know what an Orange Booker, Steve, is, but they apparently combine centre-right views on the economy with liberal views on society and immigration.
Tick. That works for the tick, for TIG.
We reckon Notting Hill Society, who are pro-business, a modern form of conservatism on the environment and society, essentially Tory modernisers. Yeah. Yeah.
And given Salbury and I think Alan have both kind of come out and said that they've bemoaned basically the fact that they've moved away from the Cameron modernisation project. I think there's a big tick on that one as well.
And then the Modern Working Life Clan, who are strong believers of the value of hard work and social mobility. You can almost hear Chris Leslie writing this as you speak. Supporting the view, it's always possible to achieve your goals as long as you work hard. It's the kind of high school musical approach to socialism. And they believe individuals should be responsible for their own financial well-being and tend to hold liberal views on the environment and LGBT rights and gender equality. And so they're probably bits of them as well.
Yeah, bits of all of those. But fundamentally, though, and this is the thing that kind of gets me, is there's enough of those three groups that you could have a sizable chunk of the electorate. I think we worked out it was something like
25% with those three groups.
Yeah. Now, if you were to get all of those, that skyrockets you into the big leagues as a new party. But the problem is, you're not going to get all of those. It's just not how these things work, and it's definitely not how these things work in a first past the post system where people have to make tactical votes and all kinds of things like that. Which means you're probably not going to pick up all the Lib Dem votes who kind of would fit into some of those areas as well. Now, based on some of the hypothetical polling that's gone out already, like the independent group would outpoll the Lib Dems currently, and the Lib Dems would drop down to about 6% or thereabouts, which means you can probably, broadly speaking, knock 2 or 3% off of that 25%, because an awful lot of the Orange Bookers probably are probably in the Lib Dems in some capacity still.
Yeah.
And as such, they're probably not going anywhere. If they've not left already, they're not going to go anywhere else now, I would hazard a guess.
I don't see why you would leave a party with a party machinery with a presence in local government to go for some... Yeah. I don't. I mean, I suppose 25, 23% is about the high watermark for Lib Dems in the Clegg era. I think it was about 23% that Lib Dems hit in 2010.
Something like that.
And I don't...
It's down a bit from, obviously, from... What? No, it went up from, and then lost seats. That was it, yeah.
And again, I think maybe it was about 20% in the high watermark under Paddy Ashdown and Charles Kennedy. So it's that sort of mix. But as you say, at the moment, all those people are scattered in different political parties. And also, as the SDP, I suppose, discovered... are scattered geographically as well, which is why you need to campaign for PR.
Yeah,
surely.
Although the independent group does have one massive thing much more in its favour,
which they didn't introduce tuition fees.
There is that, but it's also the fact that at least they can, like, when they're, I think they've already said that, you know, come the next election, they won't stand in their current seats.
Oh, have they?
I think so. I think I heard something say that. If only because they just wouldn't win. They're all in safe seats basically for their political parties, except Wollaston, I think, would probably be fine.
Angela Smith as well. I think her majority, I think, was about 1,300 in Penistone.
But yeah, they've talked to, I think they've said that they're going to move around and go to other places. And even if they haven't said that, that is what they should be doing for multiple reasons. But for no other reason, really, that they can do that and go, let's look at the Brexit votes. Let's look and see if we can identify, you know, Leaver MPs in Remain areas. You know, they can leverage potentially Brexit to something that's in their favour, because they've done something nationally important, which is a breakaway from both of the big parties over the issue of Brexit. As such, that gives them a bit more of a leeway into potentially maintaining a presence after the next election, in that they might be able to target those areas more effectively, which means they might be able to actually win some of those seats more easily than, say, the SDP could have. Because there was the SDP was just a bit more of a nebulous, don't like Michael Foot.
But then I suppose, well, it's a bit harsh. But I suppose, then the SDP got in by-elections as well.
Yeah.
So Roy Jenkins would have, if he didn't target particular seats, he just came up at particular points.
Yeah.
So I think it was Warrington, I think, Roy Jenkins tried, and then somewhere in Scotland. I mean, the other thing as well is, surely the best way of those MPs staying in the next election is to try and fight in those seats rather than naff off elsewhere, just thinking about, oh, well, we've got this Leave MP in the Remain area, let's see if we can take them out. I'm just not sure politics works that way.
If you're Chuka Romana and you're trying to go for Streatham, are you honestly thinking you can overturn what was your previous majority?
It's name recognition, I think, which is going to push them over the line. And they're going to have more recognition in their own seat rather than anywhere else.
Quite possibly, but again, it's how do they assess that risk? In effect, because that's what it is. It's just risk management of what seats do they think they could win. If Chuka Romana runs for any seat in London, momentum is just going to swarm that place, and it doesn't matter what he's got behind him. He's going to have to come with a Labour Party that's going to be very active and determined to get rid of him.
But they've sort of started to do that already. I think there's been momentum events doing that. I think in Streatham, maybe in Chris Leslie's seat as well. I just think that is a catastrophic waste of time and resources, essentially.
I would agree.
Because if you have a Labour government and Chuka Romana is elected as an independent MP, he will vote with you on some things and not on others.
Yeah, 80% of the time he's probably backing you.
And it would be the same position as if he was a backbench Labour MP, essentially. So why bother, essentially, to flood his constituency with activists in a fit of pique when you need to, when we need to win and keep other, we need to keep the marginals we've got and win others to get a majority.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be stupid. On the other hand,
this is British politics we're talking about.
Well, the Labour response has been kind of interesting, hasn't it? So,
I mean, I'm not sure interesting is the right word. It's been dumb, I feel.
So we've had Tom Watson, I think, on Monday gave a very good video. He was very articulate, yeah. Talked about how I still love this party, but sometimes I don't recognise it. It certainly gave a hint that a lot of the concerns about anti-Semitism in particular that the MPs said about at the launch, he and many of his colleagues shared. John McDonnell as well has said we're going to go on a massive listening exercise. Today on the news was talking about how Labour needed to do more on anti-Semitism. However, Ruth George said that because this these people playing TIG, it's not political parties, you say, so they don't have to reveal their donors. She thought, well, it's probably being funded by the Israeli government, which is an interesting
line to take, yes. Especially when one of the MPs in question is Jewish.
It's almost like it's an anti-Semitic trope. And then you had another MP this week, Lloyd Russell Moyle, I think it was, was talking about scabs.
Oh, he's the one that grabbed the mace, isn't he?
He is the one who grabbed the mace. I mean, the other thing is, it's not really been a great week media-wise because it feels like all the more unhinged, swivel-eyed supporters of Jeremy Corbyn have been out on the television as well. So we had Chris Williamson, not to be confused with Gavin Williamson, the assassin-faced baby. He was out saying, there's no problem with anti-Semitism, everything is fine. And George Galloway was on Sky News, and he talked about how all this stuff about anti-Semitism was a Goebbelian lie.
Yeah, and he's also said that he's written to Jenny Formby, the chair of the Labour Party, basically saying, oh, let me back in, please. Let me back in.
We haven't even mentioned that Derek Hatton was allowed back in.
And then suspended 2 days later.
Which was...
But for anti-Semitism, no less. For a tweet from 2 or 3 years ago.
From 2012, I think, about how if Jews had any sense of humanity, they would condemn Israel or something.
Yeah.
As one of my friends put it, The most amazing thing about Derek Hatton is not that he was let back into the Labour Party. Actually, it's he's 71 years old and looks about half that.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. I think it might have been Mark Wallace from Conservative Home said that he must have some kind of picture of Dorian Gray style like portrait in his attic because it's the only right thing that explains how he looks so good at his age.
I suppose just not having a conscience probably does that to you.
Yeah, probably.
And then the line from Labour... I think essentially has been that these MPs should step down and host by-elections. I don't know if you have a particular view on that.
Well, I think there's a couple of different things here. Is the notion that when you stand down or from a party or change or leave a party, you should have a by-election constitutionally in the UK is bunk. It doesn't actually exist. It was something like of the 69 party defections that have occurred in the past like 50 years or so, something like one of them, or maybe two, and they were pretty much like Douglas Carswell and Mark Reckless, had a by-election as a result of it. No one else has ever called one. Either people want the norm to change, and if that is the case, then fine. But then we need to have a conversation nationally about kind of what, again, going back to what you said, what MPs are for, who are they meant to represent? Because like it is entirely possible to represent your constituents and still find yourself out of sync with the party you used to be a member of. At which point, you could still do the job of an MP fine. You're still able to kind of do that job, in which case you shouldn't be forced out of it necessarily. But if you think it's all about party representation, then obviously, and if you voted for a Labour MP specifically, rather than voting directly for Chuka Amana, then... You know, I can totally see why you would say, no, there needs to be a by-election, they need a good, honest Labour MP in there. My personal opinion is I'm not convinced either way.
For me, I think the whole by-election thing is a very clunky, unnuanced way of trying to answer that very complicated question, as you've kind of hinted. Well, we need the written constitution, obviously, but at the moment, we have a way of... Your constituents have a way of registering whether or not they want a by-election and have no confidence in their MP, which is right of recall.
Yeah.
And if 10% of constituents hold a petition, then that MP is forced to hold a by-election. And that is very, very difficult to do. I think it's been tried with Ian Paisley Jr. in one of the Northern Ireland seats. and that failed, and there were administrative things. I think there was a problem of, it's a very rural constituency, there are only a certain amount of places that you could sign the petition, you have to sign it in person. On the other hand, if you are Streatham Labour and you want a by-election, you can try and do that if you want to.
Yeah.
The fact that none of them are, I think, means that essentially it's just being used as a line to take.
Oh, absolutely.
And It's
absolutely being used as a line to take, because the same argument stands for for when Jared O'Mara quit the Labour Party. No one called for the Lib Dems called for a by-election because obviously they think they're going to win Sheffield Hallam in a by-election, which they probably will. Astounding in and of itself, given that was Clegg's seat, but moving on. But nobody in Labour...
Let it go, Steve. He's working for Facebook now.
Really, the only difference between the two... between Jared O'Mara and between the independent group, is that O'Mara's more of a Corbynite and could be, you know, expected to vote more in line with Corbynite policies than maybe Chuka would. And that's really the only difference.
My feeling with the Labour reaction generally is that both Jeremy Corbyn in the leader's office and a lot of the kind of Chukramano wing are kind of misreading the reasons for Labour doing well a couple of years ago, in that the reason, almost essentially to boil it down, it feels to me is, it was Jeremy Corbyn's economic policies plus people hoping that a Labour government would either stop Brexit or lead to a soft Brexit.
Yep.
And given that attitudes have hardened in the last couple of years, that is probably shifting from more a soft Brexit position to a stop Brexit people's vote position.
Yeah.
But you need both of those things. That's why the Labour vote in a lot of seats was as high as it was. It's pretty obvious from the attitude of people like Chris Leslie from his pamphlet, maybe even Anna Sowerby as well, but if we stick with the Labour people for a moment, they have, I think, forgotten that actually what was proposed in the manifesto, and there were problems with it, which we talked about at the time, but essentially it was mainstream social democratic policies in Europe.
Yeah, nothing out of the ordinary. Yeah. It was Norway, not Venezuela.
And so I don't know if they've got themselves into a position where they just genuinely think in a kind of very 1999 Tony Blair way that these things are just unpalatable to the British people, or if they genuinely think that it would lead to kind of Venezuelan-style socialism, which seems an odd point of view to have.
Yeah.
But then I think on the other side, a lot of people around Jeremy Corbyn and the leader's office, and a lot of Corbyn supporters, have seen the 2017 election as a vindication of Corbyn and his policies and forgotten the bit about Brexit. Now, in a way, that's very understandable. But I do think that they've underestimated the amount of people who voted for Labour to make sure that Theresa May couldn't get a hard Brexit through.
Absolutely. They seem to have kind of gotten into their head that everybody voted Labour because of Jeremy Corbyn or because of the manifesto, forgetting that actually the way people vote is nuanced and complicated, and that you go to any constituency, you'll be able to find numerous people who voted for lots of different reasons.
The only caveat to that, I think, is I don't want to fall in the trap of assuming, well, political event A means...
political event B, well, must happen.
It's more political event A means that all my views on society are correct, in that actually I would quite like to have our 2017 manifesto plus staying in Europe.
Absolutely.
So I'm not sure if I'm in guilty of that logical fallacy or not.
Well, you can never know that until after the fact is the thing. Just by saying I'm aware that there's a fallacy here means you're probably more self-aware than 90% of pundits and politicians.
Okay. That's good. Our whole fallacy is wrong. We talked before we started recording about the fact that it feels like Chris Leslie wants this to almost be a British kind of En Marche style thing. And I do kind of feel like if the answer to a question about British politics is Emmanuel Macron, you're probably asking the wrong question.
Almost certainly. I think the issue you've got is it depends on what you mean by like an En Marche style party. Because if you mean, you know, a party that just comes out of nowhere to usurp one of the traditional parties, then potentially that could happen. But it needs to be a soft left party, because that's probably actually where the gap is. The gap for a, as you say, a pro a pro-Remain, anti-austerity, basically running on the Labour Party 2017 manifesto, but without the anti-Semitism and without the baggage of Jeremy Corbyn, Seamus Milne and John McDonnell, could probably do quite well, because the policies would be very, very popular. They'd be able to latch on to Brexit and as a kind of differentiator between them and Labour, which is something that the left-wing people are strongly against. You know, and they're all quite... pretty much all of the independent group have been very, very vocal on that point. So that could work very well for them. The problem is, I don't think that is what they are doing. I think they are looking more for a En Marche-style movement, in the sense that they're trying to be another Blair, another kind of Blairite party, which I just don't think is where the electorate is anymore. And fundamentally, it took a lot... Is that the door?
No.
It took a lot, actually, when you look into it, for En Marche to get to where it was. You had massive amounts of corruption on the Republican front in France. You had an incredibly unpopular president in the form of François Hollande, whose approval ratings were so bad. So bad. It was a perfect storm which led to En Marche. And in a system which, you know, it's kind of, in a lot of ways, quite well known for bits and pieces of corruption and things like that.
Apologies to our French listeners.
Yeah. Do we have any?
Maybe one or two.
Yeah.
They're not going for a more left-wing version, is the thing. And actually, I don't think that will happen, because we've had three Tories come to the party. I don't think any mass defections will happen until after Tuesday.
No.
But I don't think they will happen, because you've got a mix of kind of Cameron Tories and Blairite Labour, it does feel like that's the kind of space they're in now. And as we've talked before on the podcast about where's the gap for a new centre party, actually, it's almost more Ian Austin's politics, actually. So Ian Austin, MP for Dudley North, not the Lancashire cricketer, he's been vocal about saying that Labour needs to tackle immigration, should be harder on immigration and should stop immigration, all this, gonna beat them with birches or something. And so actually, the gap is almost a kind of anti-immigration, slightly authoritarian, but economically left-wing party.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, the gap in the market is, as Paula Sturridge has said. And in that sense, I think Ian Austin, with a kind of anti-immigrant rhetoric, bit more economically left-wing, he's nearer to that kind of...
Yeah, and the other thing with this kind of move towards like a British En Marche is, who is your Macron? Genuinely, who is it? Because Macron is a very charismatic, effective communicator. He is a very impressive individual. He's up his own arse, but he's a very impressive individual.
Probably because he's descended from a Roman god.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, he is Jupiterian, after all.
Which Roman god is Mike Gapes descended from?
That's a game for you all, listeners. Go through the independent group MPs and try and associate them with a Roman god. Yeah, that's a genuine question, though. It's like, who is supposed to be the figurehead of this? Who is supposed to be the one that's going to break through all of this? Because you don't have En Marche without Macron.
I mean, it looks like kind of Chukwuma Umar's more the figurehead, which kind of makes sense, but...
But he's not that impressive.
No.
He's all right. Like, Berger is probably actually the most impressive of the lot, from my opinion. But also, there's reports that she's not even convinced she wants this to become a new party.
And also, the problem they've had already is that people like Angela Smith, who aren't as impressive, have been on TV.
And screwed up.
Yeah. Finally, because we haven't really speculated about it on Not Enough Champagne yet, what does this do to the chances of a, whisper it quietly, a new general election?
Well, the independent group damn well hope there isn't one, because otherwise they're dead. And they need time to develop policies, they need time to actually get infrastructure in place, they need time to try and find supporters so that they can start building campaigning networks. If you had a general election this year, I think they're all gone. Except maybe Sarah Wollaston, because her unique position of being an MP who was chosen in an open primary.
Mm.
And I think that gives her a very strong position where she can just go, you already elected me multiple times, you elected me to be my own person, I am still my own person. That could work very well for her.
So, I mean, the question then is, will there be a new election?
Labour will want there to be. Unless you get to a situation where the Tories lose their governing majority, which means he needs another 3 or 4 Tories to leave in some capacity.
So I think at the moment they've got a working majority of about 9. Because Sinn Féin don't take their seats, yeah. Deputy Speakers don't, Fiona Arsania's in prison. I'm pretty sure it's a working majority of about 9 at the moment. So we would need 5 more people. Which, depending on how Brexit goes, could happen.
Yeah.
Only thing with the kind of politics of a new election, I suppose, is there's kind of 2 different things that are going on, I think. One of them is that there are, from the media reports, going off Tim Shipman, who's generally pretty well informed, you've got people around Theresa May who, I think, essentially are in Downing Street because Theresa May is Prime Minister, who want a new election with May to win it because that strengthens her position and therefore their careers.
Yep.
So I think there's a bit of that. But then I think it's also obvious there are people in Tory central office who do not want to be an election, who do not want there to be an election. They are leaking to the Sun that we were losing our 40 most marginal seats. We haven't got candidates in this in these seats. So, and also, do Tory MPs really want to run another election campaign with Theresa May as a head? I don't see it necessarily.
No, I don't either.
But again, I think it depends on how things go.
If the government doesn't start shifting its position sometime soon, maybe there's more ministerial resignations, maybe there are more defections from the Tories. I think that's much less likely. Rather, I think defections from the Tories is much less likely. I think ministerial resignations, one way or another, are a given at this point. Either she caves in to the ERG and she loses some of the more sane members of the cabinet who just give up and just wash their hands of the whole situation and go to the back benches because they just don't want to be a part of this anymore. Or she actually faces reality and starts, softening the position, in which case she loses the hard Brexiteers from the cabinet. So May's screwed, whatever. Corbyn's going to be the one that's going to be interesting because there's already kind of rumours on the grapevine that unless they start actually seriously backing a people's vote in some capacity, that you're going to see more walkouts and more defections. I think it was Robert Peston was reporting there was something like up to 50 other MPs were prepared to walk, which seems a bit high. When you look at a friend of the show, Luke John Davies, crunched some of the numbers a bit, and he basically says when you look at the sorts of people who've said they're not going anywhere, your Wes Streetings, your Harriet Harmans, and a lot of soft left people who they've said they're not going to be going anywhere, and it's difficult to see, even if they're rapidly anti-Corbyn, how you get to that kind of 50-50 figure without some of those people leaving, and there doesn't seem to be any indication that they are currently. So that 50 figure is probably an overestimate. But you might see another dozen, and if you do see another dozen MPs go from Labour, that throws everything up in the air, because suddenly, what would that put them on, 2024?
Depending, if we're not going to count Ian Austin as playing Tig, then it's 23.
Yeah, so if we don't count Ian Austin, they're on 23. Suddenly they're the third biggest group.
No, it's 36 SNP at the moment.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. But they're still within striking distance of that. And it's entirely feasible that you could see more defections from either side, given just how the situation is, especially as we get closer and closer to Brexit Day.
Which is 5 weeks away, less than 5 weeks away now.
We still don't have an agreement as to what it's going to look like.
And I'm not going to make any predictions because I've already had some come true and I'm not going to jinx it. We'll just have to talk about it as it happens. We have a website, which is notenoughchampagne.com. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. That would be lovely. James Cram designed our logo. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. Dave Depp is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. Our Twitter handle is at NoChampagnePod. Mine is Paperback Writer.
Mine's at Acoustic Radical.
Happy flossing.